between what the pots try to do and what the project of queer analytics is proposing. It's not the same, but there's relations. So. Now plugging the plug. Maybe use the other plug. We might just if you unplug mine. Because I need power. Yeah, bit of chaos. We'll get there. Poor Seda has like rushed. So that was one thing. So now you have to speak to test. Now we don't hear anything. Test.
Yay! I even hear myself.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, now it's that problem.
Yeah, but this
put it here because then we will pick it up a little bit later.
Test.
Test.
Not too much echo, no?
Test.
Yeah, it works. Okay, perfect. So we've been put the first three pages of the article in the reader for Ochrisma. Yeah. And so lots of different things. It was sitting in between. So yesterday we've been looking a bit at the formulas, if there was a relation between the sort of aesthetics and poetics of queer analytics and this proposal, and we realized that actually the most interesting for us was this question of externalization. One, and how the POTS proposal is putting itself inside or outside, and where. I don't know if that makes sense.
Externalities or externalization?
Well, that's part of the question, I think. So we thought maybe we can. Maybe you can say something about how this work on what's happening now? We don't hear. Ah, what's that? Wait, are you saying something?
I am.
Okay. Yes, we hear you.
Because I had, it's interesting that you use the word externalization.
Yeah.
Because I'm having a discussion with Baruch Kopi, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he has a very different definition of externalization than externality.
Mm-hmm.
Let me now find moment where. Hold on. I think externalization was about making something that's implicit explicit so that it can be measured.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you would. It. Let me just be sure that that is what he was. Oh yeah, okay, I got it. What happened? To this? So he was saying, I'll just give you like a few of his notes. It's different from how we have seen things, but it might be interesting to think about the relationship between the two.
So the relation between. Externalization and externality.
They're different things. So for him, externalization, so not externalities, is something that is what is happening is things being externalized through enclosure. So that's how it started. So he says externalization is to externalize things in the form of data. So you decide which model, and then so when you look at hold on.
I'm stopping my camera because to get some sound.
Yeah, I can do the same. Hold on.
Okay.
But
it's nice to see each other. Mm-hmm. Just to begin.
Okay, Externalization is when you make accessible formerly occult or hidden processes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like psychiatrists helping externalize your emotional, like inner emotional feelings, like fears, by giving you words, it's giving the form that for something that was formerly occult. That's how we define externalization.
Yeah. Yeah.
Versus externalities, it's basically the unplanned effects of economic production. There can be positive and negative externalities for him. So let's say that a new technology is introduced, if one person uses that technology, like a fax machine, there might be no positive externality, but once the network effects kick in, like everybody starts using fax machines, then there's a positive externality. Now, if that's unplanned or planned, and what planning means here, are all open questions. A negative externality for him are harms not paid for by the producer, so the compensation or internalizing the costs. So in a sense, there are harms that are not directly, that could be harms caused by people not directly doing the actual production. For example, mining in Congo has externalities, both in terms of positive externalities like jobs and restaurants opening or a local economy being created, but it also has negative externalities like people dying, people having to militate for better wages, and then there's all this harm to the environment, to the locals, etc. So the typical response in economic externalities is to do things like tax, introduce tax. He was talking about the Pigouvian tax, and this is when you calculate the value of negative externality, which you can imagine is an ambitious project, and then you tax the case.
Yeah.
But of course, this idea that of course that you still do the thing, right?
Yeah.
That you just kind of pay your way out of the harms, which is kind of a weird thing because ideally what you want is some of these things just not to happen.
Yeah.
And so I think those are the limitations of the way economists talk about externalities.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of, I mean, these are things I had read about, but this was the interesting addition that Bob was a difference between externalization, which is like that process of, you know, making something explicit, like externalizing, making something that is hidden or occult, turning it into, for example, data, and then putting it into economic interest, which I would say optimization relies on that process of externalization, but it then also causes externalities, and those are two different things. I don't know how you discussed it, but that was our discussion.
Well, maybe one thing to say is that we talked about ways that the externalization is done. Like we started to see, because you could say discretization is a form of externalization, and in the systems, let's say the industrial systems we are surrounded by, that is usually a violent process. In the sense of reducing and simplifying and norming. And so one of the discussions that has been around is like, are there ways you can externalize that are responsible, that are that somehow take responsibility for the simplification? So understanding that it's not about not externalizing, because I think if you use the example of an externalization in a therapeutic process, I think that's something we have been talking about in the sense of annotation, analytics, etc. So it's not that it's not an interesting process as such, but it's then about the way it's done. Does that make any sense? When
it's the way and it's the purpose,
yeah.
Right? So I think because we don't do things just like that. Even if it's not a utilitarian purpose, there's purpose, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Absolutely, it's funny because we came to similar terms when we were discussing. We talked about standardization.
Standardization,
part.
Yeah.
Standardization.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the standardization of like data bits and then like all of it scaling up to standardizing transport and then airports themselves becoming standardized. And I would say like with Airbnb and Uber and all of this, like cities become standardized too. And you can imagine that if you want to have self-driving cars, the cities and the roads and the buildings and the way we move, et cetera, has to be standardized as well. So yeah, I think there is this kind of, you know, little steps of annotating whatever the captchas that Google or Cloudflare will serve you, which then becomes like a standardized way of reading images, then leads to a process through which the cities and the environments get standardized. So I think that and that has a lot to do with purpose, right? And it's really funny because when you do captchas, you're not necessarily aware of the purpose, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even, it's very interesting that even annotation has been turned into a process where the purpose is abstracted from the labor itself.
Okay, so just to because annotation has come up as a way to counter, well, to we talked about holding damage as a way to somehow not repair damage, but find ways to live with it. And then if that annotation itself becomes a source of data processes or optimization, or that's double painful, but sinister.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm taking notes as well, sorry. I mean, absolutely, and I think there's some interesting work that is trying to counter that, but if you think about you know, all the Mechanical Turkers who are doing the annotation work,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think at this point, probably the Mechanical Turkers are the well-paid in this scheme, right, of annotators. I mean, if you think about every captcha that you solve,
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, all the ways in which literally, like, all of our movements are used to labor, all the sensing that is done through our phones and all the ways in which we're asked about or confirming what we're doing are also forms of annotation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think annotation is like an extremely political site where, you know, it's almost like there's no possibility to make a movement without adding to the knowledge base of the next machine learning algorithm.
But it's more annotation in the way like how to make sense with data. I mean, it's really the annotation sphere in the field of the data industry, if I understood correctly.
Can you explain again?
Ah, yeah. I'm saying like here I understand annotation as in annotated data, like all this Mechanical Turk and this training for algorithm and this annotation field, but in the computing part.
Meaning there's, so it makes a difference where the annotation is
not
done?
Not documentation. Annotation means like you label data.
Yeah.
You process it so it is able to be processed by the algorithm.
But I mean, a question, like if we think about none of these processes being out of these optimization process operations, then it's important to think about what is the difference between annotation that is, let's say, allows critique, is making sense, has a way to grasp, and or maybe it's the same thing. What annotation is an annotation work that is basically feeding?
I think it's very different.
So where is it different for you?
One is a process of fluidification of the industry itself, which is a distributed labor,
mm-hmm.
And has no intent of understanding processes, it's fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
It's not part of a collective process of
Okay, so wait.
Yeah.
So it's fragmented?
Yes, fragmented.
It's not collective?
No, it's not collective. And it's one step of the labor division.
So it's part of a labor division,
and it's
or dividing labor?
And fluidification of capitalism in its like informational transformation.
Yeah, so it adds to capital flows.
Yeah, like for example, like when you are asked by Facebook to tag pictures of your friends.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, and it's not something which is like, I'm not even sure why people does that, like for free. Like it's maybe because they want to include themselves into this social game or whatever. But this is very different from going to conferences, making annotations, sharing this annotation together, building
mm-hmm.
collective intelligence,
mm-hmm.
Trying to understand and summarize systems.
Mm-hmm.
It's for me, it's not like, I mean, they share the same word, like, but it's not the same
work.
Yeah, absolutely not the same stuff.
But would you say, Seda, is the protective optimization technology, is that related to annotation, to externalization?
I mean, I think, again, like coming back to the conversation with Bhavan, I'm kind of channeling him and I hope that's okay. We were talking about abstraction as a way of like abstracting what you need while creating a lot of waste. I mean, that's at least what the economic system does. And optimization is kind of building on abstraction if it's not a form of abstraction itself. So I think the point we're getting at with the Plots paper is that literally these optimization systems are creating waste, right? Like they're treating certain populations in certain environments and the effects on certain environments that they have as waste. What happens if we have the waste talk back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is where we're trying to make an intervention and very well aware that as soon as we talk back, we get labeled as waste again,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, in the sense, neighborhood that is being somehow destroyed by some optimization algorithm because you're considered waste, and then if you somehow start feeding into that algorithm so that you can either be not considered waste or you can re-optimize yourself or you sabotage the algorithm so that it also is not effective elsewhere, so that it's dismissed by the world, I think you're basically making the waste talk back. Now, how that relates to annotation, I guess one could argue that if you could pose yourself as not waste again, so if you could like obfuscate that wastefulness that the optimization system sees and say that you're actually valuable, you're subverting the label in a certain kind of way. Maybe
but it's like more like a rewriting or a
I think there's contestation, there's disputation, there's poisoning,
mm-hmm.
There's obfuscation. All of these are kind of the methods of POTS.
But they're all methods that I mean, this is where I got, like in the discussions also, I wanted to talk to you, is that it seems
mm-hmm.
that the POTS do that within the systems they critique. Meaning they stay, like also if you hear the tools you bring into the process are all tools of response. So it means that they are reactive. Am I right if I say that?
I think, yeah, I mean, I think POTS are, I mean, I think POTS have a problem with that they're not very good at, like, the way we're kind of hiding, it has a temporality problem, right? It doesn't have a conception of before and after, really, but although there's one that it's assuming, right? Like, because it literally kind of assumes that there's a world before optimization, and there's a world after optimization, and there's a world after POTS, right? Like, so it has, like, an order. And in reality, all of us are historical subjects, like so are optimization systems, so are POTS speakers, and so are the environments. And so the, you know, as soon as you bring history into optimizations and plots, there's a lot of confusion as to, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done to bring in the history, and POTS does not do it. POTS is a little ahistorical. And I think, so that makes it seem like it is reacting, right? Like it has two temporal points, the introduction of optimization systems and the introduction of POTS. And then there's something about that. The world is constructed in these two temporal points, but we of course know that in a sense, an optimization system is a historical system, right? Like roads were before. Mm-hmm. And somebody has organized the roads in the way that they are, right? Like they were also built under some logic which included some optimization, and there was always resistance to that. So POTS and optimization systems are kind of, I would say, historically coupled mechanisms that have existed historically. So they're in a sense always a reaction to each other. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yes.
When roads were built and cities were built, there came the resistance to it as soon as they were being built, right? Like it was maybe somebody's land, somebody had to introduce property law, somebody had to lose a property, you know, like, or maybe there was a sale, so there was some profit, and there was a sale in certain ways and not in others. So in order for these roads to exist, on which now the optimization systems exist, so there's always a history of somebody benefiting and somebody creating waste, and then somebody resisting. So yes, POTS are a reaction to optimization, but in history they're kind of coupled partners with each other.
Yeah, maybe I just got one question for you, Seda.
Only one.
Yes. Only one. No,
because you most of the, I don't know, questions I had were already answered before. So it's, but it's more because of this reactive nature. I really wonder, like, at what moment these POTS will not become a kind of reinforcement for the optimization process, and mostly because of the asymmetry of the
right.
conflict between them.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the first paper that we published on POTS, it's called like "The Revolution Will Not Be Optimized," and it had a question mark. and I think POTS are definitely not. I mean, the problem with optimization logic is that it's so contagious that it's almost a dangerous proposition to say we will battle optimization with more optimization. And you know, I was just talking with Christian from Robotics,
yes.
And you know, they've been talking with labor organizing around the Amazon warehouses, like and you know, the warehouses have now already caught wind of labor organizing, so they know that okay, if there's a strike that day, we just have to bring 300 new workers, right? Like, because we know some of the workers will go out, and so in order to keep the production at the level it is, we just, you know, on demand bring in new workers. And so what they did now, the strikers, what they did is on Black Friday, they made it look like they're going to go on strike, and then they didn't. And that had the effect that Amazon had brought in about 300 extra people, but did not have as much work to do. Now, we need to ask ourselves, what is the gain here for the workers,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they still worked. Is this maybe a new principle of solidarity in the sense of now I have 300 people that were not abused to work like mad per day, but they were maybe having a slower work day, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Can we see that as a win? I mean, I would love to talk with the people who organize this as to what is the gain, right? Like what can you battle out with an optimization system by playing with its parameters, and how much of it is just you need to burn down the pucker? Like, I really don't know.
But
I think there is some interesting questions to be asked there.
But there is something I don't know, I think it's also because of this this week we really have tried on in every possible way we could imagine to somehow step out of the systems we are part of, or to imagine what it would mean to not be in the space we are normally are, like we normally function within. So it seems when you explain this, again, like this impression that the space that the pots can operate in is defined by optimization.
No. Okay. So I know it looks like that, and let's say that there are different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this will answer. Like I have the same struggles, but I feel like it's still too new of a domain to come to such conclusions. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that, let's see if I can keep my thoughts together. One example, I don't think it's in our papers, is that people have been drawing dark circles on roads in the Bay Area, where there's a lot of experimentation with so-called self-driving cars or autonomous cars,
mm-hmm.
because autonomous cars have a serious pothole problem,
mm-hmm.
right? In the sense that they can't distinguish between a black circle on the road and a pothole. And so if they see one, they just veer away. And so neighborhoods have been using this to keep the experimentations that these autonomous cars are constantly part of outside of their neighborhoods. And so I'm not sure that is an optimization proposition, right? Like in the sense of it's a kind of pot which in itself is not optimized. It's a very, very simple one. Are you guys there?
Yeah.
Yes.
And it shows you that, you know, the way to build pots is not just go through building more machine learning. Like you can actually have, you know, also when Uber drivers turn off their apps to induce, is another goal where, you know, you're manipulating the system, but in a way that you don't necessarily have to optimize yourself, right? Of course, like we then take it to the next level, and we're like, okay, how can we optimize the circles that you draw? It's a kind of joke,
mm-hmm.
but also real, like so that you can draw the minimal amounts of circles that look like potholes on roads, and make sure that no cars enter your neighborhood. But I mean, you don't need to do that, but you could. It's one of the things we play with. So that's number one, and number two, and this one is from breakfast this morning. Is the fact that optimization systems are, in a way, they're working for a very, very small percentage of the world population.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very fixated also, I mean, they're of course, like, you know, in order to keep the technological production going, especially of technical things like, you know, computers and tablets and phones, they do have like this intense control of, you know, anywhere from like the regions and you know, mining areas on the African continent to supply chains through China, etc. But at the end of the day, they're focused on, let's say, like 1 or 2% of the population, right? And so I think that there's something that we are not focusing on when we do pots, which is basically the increasing regard for 98% of the world is waste.
Mm-hmm. But this is this.
Maybe there's something.
No. I follow. I mean, I think that's what we're trying to say. Is like, how do you, or what is the attempt in this week? I think is to how do you not ignore what is happening there, but at the same time also acknowledge that there's other worlds possibly.
Yeah.
That you either need to. Make space for, or imagine, or
talk about,
definitely talk about, or hear about,
or learn from.
That there's something really dark, like a black hole.
Yeah.
In optimization, that it keeps drawing energy towards it, and so what would be tricks or ways to divert energy in another direction? I think that's
right.
Where the queer comes from as a
mm-hmm.
like a
yeah.
like a directional proposal. You see, like
yeah,
a, directing
yeah,
away
yeah.
Or
yeah.
oblique or not with.
And I think I mean part of
following.
It. Part of it is I think the question of like what is the bigger project
mm-hmm.
under which that question is being asked, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think. I think the bigger project under which is that not only is 98% of the world not waste, you know that value needs to be abstracted from, right, optimized
mm-hmm.
from, but that 98% is an entity that we care for,
mm-hmm.
right, and that we want to create a better life for or better conditions for or and that they're interrelated, right? Like they're not like waste, and then once you get the value out, they're good, and then the rest you can just drop. But I think that I don't know how to do this. Like I don't know that POTS gets us there. POTS is just kind of it. POTS is also this is I think really really important is a provocation to start talking about optimization.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
I understand.
Because I mean that I guess that's kind of clear, but it's really important to show. That if you question this logic of optimization, you very quickly get shut down.
Yeah.
Can right?
you can
and
you
I'm
say
really
something about that? Because I mean, in this environment, I think, like I knowing you and your work, I understand this paper as a provocation in a very specific environment. So maybe it's good. I mean, would be good to hear when you say that, like what you mean by that. Like who are
you
talking to
that,
with this?
Yeah. Who are what?
Who are you talking to with the proposal?
I mean, I think, first of all, like, there's so much stupid discussion about artificial and then, like, goes into this awful direction of, like, AI is good or AI is bad. Like, it's very quickly back to this, like, dystopian visions. And I think the externalities,
say that?
Sensored by the
AI.
Yeah.
No.
This is internet, I can't tell you to say this.
It's a secret, it says your...
I thought you were serious.
Oh, no, she's a blonde.
Oh.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm told I'm having connection issues. It cannot be.
Yeah,
this.
Now there's two of you. It's very funny. Or maybe there's two of me. No.
I think you're just one. Okay, so we were like AI good, AI bad, and then it started to scramble.
Yeah, I think like at least personally, my project is to stop talking about technologies abstractly and see them as labor processes.
Mm-hmm.
That then, you know, bleed into how society is organized.
Thumbs are up
so...
here.
Say it again?
Thumbs are up here for that.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I think the whole part, I mean, if I had just written optimization systems, it would have just been a critique and somebody would hear it and somebody would, people would just move on. But when we mobilize a bunch of computer scientists to attack machine learning,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and it's really important to know that there is something called adversarial machine learning in
mm-hmm.
computer science,
mm-hmm.
and it
what?
Just considers the people who
that
are using the machine learning and trying to bypass it as adversaries,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And
sorry,
so,
explanation here.
And it was really interesting. When we wrote to computer science conferences and said, okay, we want to turn around this image of the adversary of machine learning, where the service provider who makes machine learning work, or like deploys it, because everybody makes it work, there's no machine learning that works by itself,
mm-hmm.
That we consider that service provider adversarial, we literally got rejected from all the machine learning conferences. Because for them, it's like the machine learning service provider is a hero or is angelic, you know, like is benign. And I think it was very interesting to see, especially from machine learning and AI community, how defensive they were.
Mm-hmm.
of the designer, right, or the service provider, and even from legal people to say like, oh, you can't do this. This is people frauding and lying and I don't know what, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think those were some of the objectives, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think what POTS does is, you know, in terms of like how the population that is considered as waste is tied to the population that is considered as gaining value or worthy of value. And here again, going back to conversation with Baru, you know, he was saying, you know, a lot of the retirement funds, for example, in Germany, are investing in the mining companies in South Africa, which make these which are like the source of these terrible labor conditions. You know, and so here you might have people who are workers, you know, asking for retirement or guarantees of retirement and good working conditions or good living conditions, literally being played against workers in South Africa who are pulling things out of the mining companies. And I think it's that kind of relationality. I mean, maybe it's interesting, like the next generation of POTS would be ones that would play on that relationality, right? So they would literally, you know, not just think about Waze or the self-driving car and the neighborhood, but they would also consider the labor conditions of the people who are annotating the images that are being fed in through these cars into some Amazon Mechanical Turk,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, so that the further relations considered where what is being optimized is not just, or re-optimized is not only with relation to the neighborhood, but also the labor conditions of the people who are doing the
mm-hmm.
of the data sets.
Mm-hmm.
Does that seem?
And they've created a proposition of how to include that.
Sorry, because I
didn't read the document. So you're working on a proposition of how to include that, how to work on these relationalities that go.
I think that should be like. That should be the next thing with POTS. Like, I think POTS should go beyond just direct cost and benefit, but think about the relational. It doesn't do that now, because we're just in the process of imagining this thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, this we when we were really looking carefully, we were indeed wondering about, like, how does it, let's say, where it says world at some point, and it felt like still very tied to the isolated process it tries to respond to or look at. So this is what we try to say, like, how does it how does it talk about relations beyond its own incitement somehow?
I think it already is opening a relational model that's very, very narrow.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about, like, I mean, some of the critique that we're making is on fairness systems, right? Like, fairness, that, oh, discrimination is caused by algorithms, so we just tweak the algorithm and then remove bias, and discrimination has, you know, just poof, disappeared. And what we're trying to say is that already, like, what we're trying to say is that every algorithm that is going to be deployed exists in a world with environments and populations, right? And I think that in itself was like so hard to even get into the model, you know. And then there's also the question, I mean, I don't have the paper in front of me now, but I think we now have a variable which could be an individual, it could be a population, it could be environment, it could be multiples of those things, which is, you know, a little flat, I would say.
Wait, we have the agent, the action.
Yeah, I think the agent can be an individual, it can be a group, it can be, it can be an environment, right? It can be all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, in that sense, we've flattened the world of agents, right?
Mm-hmm.
While, of course, also taking a big step, which is that agents are not just the people whose data is in that data set.
Yeah.
Right? So there is, so to say, an expansion of relationality and accepting that, you know, individuals exist in environments in which these systems are introduced, and in this relationality, injustice happens. So we're able to put that forward, But absolutely, it's very much about this one system, and it doesn't go forward from there.
So that it's almost three. We're about to move to a queer analytic session. I'm just going to switch on us as well. But I think I keep on thinking that there's we'll try to bridge this back again. I think to think about the queer analytics with this in mind, and then also to bring that back to your work. I think because, for example, there's questions about time that are really clearly asked in the queer analytics. Relationality, agents, so all these are maybe more on the foreground there. So it would be interesting to see if this can help in conceptualizing a pot that is, well, it will maybe not be queer, but it might be...
I would love to make queer pots. Or maybe pots are queer, but they can be more queer.
Yeah, I said they were, but...
But I mean, this is really, it's really the very, very beginning
they are queer,
of trying to... what is it?
No. It's just the word pot in Dutch means lesbian.
Ah, right.
So, or is a slang for lesbian? So, anyway.
I think this is why I'm super, super stoked that you guys wanted to talk, and I think I found this book was Martha Poon who pushed it on us. And I don't know if it's the best frame, as you guys also noted, it does focus on one black hole and not others. Might not be very good in that sense of providing relationality, but I'm super stoked people want to think about optimization, and to also think about pots in a much more radical or relational or queer or much more focused and yet more generous way would be my dream come true. And if we can keep the conversation going, that's great.
Okay, it's a promise.
Good, nice. Now you guys go. Say hi to the queer analytics and everybody else.
Will do. Thanks a lot, Seda. And we'll be back to this. Yeah?
Okay, yeah. All right, thanks.
Thanks a lot for making time. Ciao, ciao.
And if you want to read the article, I think we have a few copies printed.
Okay. Do you think I'll manage? No?